Welcome to Open Air, KALW's weekly magazine of most things culturally considered. Good afternoon, I'm Kevin Vance, sitting in for David LaTulipe this week. We have a full program today. We'll be talking about a production of the great musical South Pacific going on the peninsula this month. We'll be talking about Antonin Dvorak's music being featured this year at Music at Menlo. Diane Keogh will be in with her recommendations on what and who to see, and we'll have a little Sex in the City. Familiar music for those of you who have television sets. That's the opening strains of the television program Sex in the City. I want to welcome to the KLW microphones Heklina.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So what are you doing with Sex in the City?
Well, so Sex in the City, we call it Sex in the City Live, and we did it last year in 2013 on a weekly basis just to see how fun it would be. You know, how could the show be any more gay? Well, it could be more gay when you have drag queens playing the parts of Charlotte, Carrie, Miranda, and Samantha, and all the stuff.
The main four characters.
The main four characters, yes. And it was a huge hit. We sold out every week. But this time we wanted to make it more of a shorter run, so we're doing a 3-week run at the Victoria Theater, and we're bringing in a special guest playing Charlotte from RuPaul's Drag Race,
really?
Alaska Thunder. I can't say her full name because it's a dirty word.
I
but
understand.
You got it. Yes,
I comprehend.
Yes.
How long have you been doing this?
Well, we did actually we debuted a short run in 2012, and then we did a year long string of shows in 2013, and now we're getting a bigger, much bigger production this year for the 3-week production at the Victoria. We actually have a set designer. We have somebody who's designing all of the costumes, because Carrie Bradshaw, you know, for a big drag queen, you can't really go and buy things off the rack that Carrie Bradshaw would have worn. Mm-hmm. She was very much of a fashionista, so I have to actually have all those outfits tailored for me. And so we have a huge budget, big production, so we're really excited about it. I wouldn't say huge budget, but there's a budget this time.
You got a lot of people doing a lot of work.
Yes, exactly.
And they will be handsomely compensated.
Well, I don't know about that, but they'll be compensated, yes.
How did you get the idea to do this?
Well, so for several years now, we've been doing live stage productions of The Golden Girls, and which is kind of the same. It's almost like Sex and the City took the template of The Golden Girls and made it kind of more younger, because you have the four characters. So Carrie is kind of the Dorothy Zbornak. Samantha, of course, is Blanche Devereaux. Miranda is Sophia Petrillo. And then the dingbat, Charlotte, is Rose Nyland. So it's kind of the four characters, but you put them into the urban setting of New York City and you have them have lots of sex. So it's very similar, because when I thought Golden Girls, you look at the things the Golden Girls wear and you're like, wow, that'd be so great to try that with drag. And it's the same thing with Sex in the City. It's really hilarious when you have these big drag queens going into all these situations that the four protagonists got into. There's a lot, you know, you forget how much sex those girls actually had and talked about, mostly Samantha. Hmm. And it seemed very cutting edge for the time that came out, you know, the late 90s. And it still is a little bit cutting edge, you know, some of the situations they get into and the things they talk about over brunch. They're always eating.
Oh, my God. What are they really talking about this on the television? Oh, it's cable. That's
right. It's cable. It's HBO. So they got away with talking about a lot of that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wanted to ask, because Sex and the City took place in New York City, will Sex and the City Live be taking place in New York, or will it be taking place in San Francisco?
It'll be taking place in Manhattan.
Okay.
Like a lot of the things. Although the artwork that we're putting around has us with San Francisco in the background. Mm. Because we all call it the city.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean,
but
it's not a big stretch of the imagination that you can put these same situations within. It's not very New York centric. We don't talk about New York a lot.
Mm.
So, but whenever we do, we talk about things like in Tribeca or like with situations we'll be in New York. But people are just really coming for the sex and the outfits and the raunch and the glamour, you know. And our audience, it's so funny, it's about 60% straight women and 35% gay men, and then 5% the unfortunate straight men that were dragged there by their girlfriends. And I can always tell, I always look out in the audience, there's always that one uncomfortable straight guy just like, why the hell am I here? You know what I mean?
How do you talk to somebody like that? How do you make him feel at ease?
I don't. I don't want to make him feel at ease. I want to make him feel like he's at the gayest thing he's ever been to in his life. But it's fun. I mean, I think everybody can enjoy it. You know what I mean?
Were you able to do this with the blessing of the Sex at the City television
people? Yes, and you know, the best part about it is Darren Star, the creator of Sex and the City, came to our production last year. We were so nervous about it because he created the show, and he was front row. But afterwards, he posed with all of us, took pictures of it, and he said our production was even funnier than the actual show.
Mm.
So that was the highest compliment.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
So nobody's going to sue anybody for...
Well, they could try, but I mean, the thing is, actually, that'd be great press if they tried to sue us. Mm-hmm. It'd be even better publicity. but also, there is something within theater where if it's a parody of something, we're not doing straightforward episodes. We are taking plot lines from some episodes and mashing them together and turning them more into like a vaudeville, or not vaudeville, but kind of, it's very campy. It's a lot campier than the original dialogue in the original show.
So it'll be original. It'll be your own writing.
It'll be our own take and our own spin on the show. And because, you know, we do, like, you know, with Golden Girls, there's nothing but reverence for that material and for those characters. We love all those actresses. With Sex and the City, sometimes Carrie Bradshaw is annoying. Because she's never happy. You know what I mean? She's not happy when she doesn't have Mr. Big, then she gets Mr. Big, and then she's not happy. So it's kind of like we make fun of the fact that she's this neurotic, you know, privileged, you know, woman who just like, she just wants shoes and she wants, you know, Mr. Big. And there's a lot we can make fun of her about, but it's all in good fun, though. And we know that the material is sacred to a lot of people, so we just keep it. We keep it irreverent, but we do know that it's like sacred to a lot of these women that are coming to check out the show. I was in the audience when that movie came out, and I saw all those women freaking out about the outfits those people were wearing. So yeah, that's why a lot of them are going to be coming and looking at the stuff we're wearing, and you know.
So you'll be faithful to a lot of things, and not so much taking a lot of editorial license.
Well, yeah, you have to have all the characters in there. So you especially have to have Mr. Big, and you have to have Steve, which was, you
Mr.
know,
Mr. Big being the boyfriend of.
Yeah, the Mr. Right that Carrie was always looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she was with him, and then they broke up, and then they were back together, and then Mr. Big got married, and then she broke up that marriage, and, you know, all that stuff. So he was the big love interest in the entire show. There was the guy Aiden for a while, and we did touch on him a little bit last year, but this production we're doing it's all Mr. Big.
Who are we? Is it Tranny Shack?
It's a lot of people from Tranny Shack, but mostly it's our production company called Velvet Rage Productions.
Velvet Rage. I like that.
It's a book about a specific type of gay anger.
Hmm.
So, and they call it Velvet Rage.
Interesting.
But it was an interesting read. Anyway, we thought that was a great title for the production company. So I'm playing Carrie Bradshaw. Alaska Thunder, F,
mm-hmm.
is playing
yes.
Charlotte. Darcy Drollinger, who is the director, is playing Samantha. And Lady Bear is playing Miranda. And then we have a drag king playing the part of Mr. Big.
Oh.
And we have some other people playing the incidental, you know, roles. Some drag roles and some not drag.
Oh wow! So we'll see everything. We'll see the lady sitting down eating lunch and talking about all kinds of things and singing and dancing.
Situation? No singing and dancing. Situations I probably can't tell you about over on this radio show. But yes, they get into all kinds of sexual hijinks. Mostly Samantha. Once again, she's the slut. Can I say slut? She's
yeah.
a slut.
Yes, okay. You can say that.
All right.
You can say that. Well, if my kid wants to go, should I hire a babysitter or can I bring him along?
How old is he?
18, actually.
Oh, yeah, that's fine. Yeah, bring him along.
But if he was 17.
Oh, it's not. It's all ages, but I would just say don't bring an 8-year-old.
Don't bring an 11-year-old.
Don't bring an 11-year-old kid, and there's, you know. Again, I'm hesitant to say what's going on in the show, but it's adult material.
But it sounds like fun.
It is fun. And, you know, there's no real nudity or anything. So it's all just very, if somebody who's like 13, I mean, kids nowadays, I forget, kids nowadays, they're subjected to you know, all kinds of stuff on every day. You know, I was in a show the other day at the Castro Theater, and I didn't realize there was like 16, 15-year-old kids there. And I dropped the F-bomb when I was on stage. And then I met the kids, you know, and then in the lobby, I was like, oh, I'm so sorry. And the moms were all like, oh, we always say that word. You know what I mean? So you forget the kids are subjected, you know. And when I was 15 and 16, I'm sure I was saying all that stuff and hearing all of it, but I just want to be sensitive to that a little bit.
There's a great video on YouTube of you playing the character Carrie, doing the same exact opening of Sex in the City.
Oh yeah,
everything right down to being splashed by the bus going by.
Yeah, we filmed that down in Union Square, and that was, and I got the tutu and all that stuff. That was interesting because we started shooting in front of the Bulgari store, and I was just standing there, and I looked in, and then the person came out and was like, you can't stand here, you can't film here. And it was like some bitter old queen, you know, and I was like, oh, sorry. So we moved down a few feet, but we were still technically in front of the store, and he came out, don't stand there either. I was like, this is a public sidewalk. You know what I mean? You don't own the sidewalk. So I was just like, you know, if you really don't want drag queens here, then don't push your luck, because I'll have 20 drag queens here in like half an hour
and protesting you. We know how powerful drag queens are.
Exactly. He was just like a drag queen in front of his store was going to stop people from buying. Like, who buys Bulgari anyway? You know what I mean? Like $30,000 what? Brooch or something? I mean, but that was fun. It was fun to shoot that trailer.
Heklina. Tell me about the name Heklina.
Heklina. So I moved to San Francisco from Reykjavik, Iceland in the early 90s. And it was one of those things. I started doing drag right when I moved here. And I just needed a drag name. And it was like, oh, because there's a volcano in Iceland called Hekla. I was like, okay, Hekla, Heklina. It was one of those things that you think of in 5 seconds and then it sticks, you know.
Mm. Well, the show is Sex and the City Live.
Yes.
It's taking place at the Victoria Theater. The address for the Victoria Theater is 2961 16th Street. That's between Mission and Cap Street here in San Francisco. It's happening 3 weekends only. That's July 24th through the 10th of August. Performance dates are the 24th, 25th, 26th, 27th, then the 31st, 1st, 2nd, and 3rd of August, and then the 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th of August. Showtimes are Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 8 p.m., Sunday at 7 p.m. Tickets and information, you can go to Sex and the City Live, all spelled out, .evenbright.com.
Eventbrite, yes.
Eventbrite.
Yes.
And you can also go to trannyshack.com as
correct.
Well. Anything I left out?
No, that's it. Just come see the show.
This sounds exciting.
We'll be selling Cosmos in the lobby.
Oh, Heklina, thank you for coming to KLW.
Thank you for having me.
We have a wonderful show. We're going to talk about Antonin Dvorak coming to Menlo Park. Thank you. a short performance of Antony Dvorak's Slavonic Dance, given by Wu Han on the piano from the Through Brahms series at Music at Menlo from a few years ago, I think it was. I'd like to welcome to the KLW microphones Gloria Chen. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. So how exciting. You're going to have Antony Dvorak's music featured at Music at Menlo.
Yeah. This is our 12th season Music at Menlo, and every year there is a theme, and this year's theme is around Dvorak. So everything's going to be anchored around Dvorak.
Why Dvorak?
Well, he's, as you know, one of the most highly regarded Czech composers. And in looking in his history, he's really quite unique that he has the Viennese roots from Beethoven, Mozart, and Haydn. And then he has his Central European roots and the Czech music, folk traditions. And he came to America. He was highly influenced by the Native American nationalism as well, and wrote the American String Quartet. So it's really quite diverse and unique that there's no one like him that really embraces these different traditions together.
So what is, so will the festival focus all on Dvorak's music, or other people who Dvorak obviously worked within the circles of many other people?
Yeah, so we have 8 concerts on main stage, and it goes through Dvorak, the Viennese roots, the Lobkowitz legacy, which is the patronage that really embraced Dvorak and has his manuscripts. His father worked there as a butcher, and his birthplace is right across the street from the Lobkowitz castle. So one of the descendants of the royal family will be actually giving a talk on campus. So it's going to be fascinating. A concert on Beethoven and friends, concert on the Hungarian tradition, including Liszt, Bartok, Kodály, Dohnányi, and then back to Dvořák.
Excellent.
Yeah.
I've been wondering how to pronounce Dohnányi's name. So thank you for doing that for me.
Absolutely.
Well, you're a pianist, but you're also running the festival as well. Will you have a chance to perform?
I do. The artistic directors are actually David Finkel and Wu Han, and I'm the director of the Chamber Music Institute, so I will be overseeing the day in and day out of the Institute and the Young Performers concerts. But I will be playing in 2 of the concerts on main stage. One is the classical tradition. I'll be doing Schubert and Haydn. And then the Hungarian concert, I'll be doing this. Actually, I think this might be Liszt's only chamber music work for violin and piano, called the Grand Duo. So it's going to be fireworks.
I want to ask how long you've been playing piano.
Sure. I started when I was 5, and that was 32 years ago.
You don't even have to do the math for it. It's not even necessary. Do you have a favorite composer you like to play?
You know, recently I've really felt a deep connection with Brahms.
Really?
Yeah, not so much when I was younger, but recently I love the trios, the piano quartets, intermezzo, just his language and the depth in his music. I've really come to really love it.
Is it hard to be a musician and then have to do all this administrative stuff running this event, or is
I love it.
Are you really loving this?
I do. I really love it. I think it's I think I would probably get bored if I just stuck with one aspect of it, and I really am just having a great time playing and teaching, and also learning all kinds of administrative aspect. And who better to learn it from than David Finkel and Wu Han? So
that's great. Oh, yeah. How did you get to work with Music at Menlo?
So I came as a student of the Institute back in 2006. And
which institute again is this?
This is the Chamber Music Institute at Music at Menlo. So we have the festival, but there's also education component to the festival. So I was part of that program in 2006 and changed my life. Was such an eye-opening experience to be in this world of chamber music 24/7. And was invited back to coach the younger performers, and then became the director in 2010.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask you about some of the concerts. We touched a little bit about it, and they're all on various aspects in Dvorak's life. Most people remember him, I know of him, as being one who came from Europe and embracing American culture. Did he, one of your shows is going to feature music of Charles Ives and George Crumb. Did they know each other? Did Dvorak actually know No, Charles Ives, I know from early 20th century, and George Crumb, also 20th century.
Yeah, I wouldn't imagine that they would know each other at that time, but I think they share in the sense that they really embraced the American musical language and wrote these folk elements in their music as well. And so I think that's where the legacy, the Dvořák legacy of the American influences led to that point.
Yeah, there. It's people will sometimes think that, you know, America is such a has so many influences that come in, and is there such a thing as original American music? And of course there is, because obviously Dvořák saw that with fresh European ears. And of course, Copland incorporated a lot of it too.
And he went to Spillville, Iowa.
Did he really? What did he do in Spillville, Iowa?
I think he spent 3 months there and embraced the Native American music and African American music. And
did he really?
Yes. Yeah.
What was in Spillville, Iowa, that he was studying? Was there a music institute, or were there just musicians there? Or what's the story with that?
He was invited by the New York Conservatory in late 1800s to come and head the conservatory for a few years, and then decided to make a trip to you know, America and just kind of checking it out and yeah.
Well, yeah, there'll be 8 innovative, thematically programmed concert programs, which we talked a little bit about. And then something here called 4 artist-curated carte blanche concerts. Tell me about those.
Those are absolutely fascinating. Basically, we tell the artists, you have the carte blanche and bring us a program that you've always wanted to play. And they're curated by the artists. So sometimes we've had pianists that have given 3 sections of recitals, and one from Italy, one from French, one from Germany, and it goes on for 4 or 5 hours. Or sometimes we have a cellist that does the complete Bach cello suites. Sometimes we have a violinist that plays pieces from Bach all the way to Jörg Widmann. So it's just really anything goes, and it's led by the artists and their vision, and they kind of guide us through these marathon concerts, which is so inspiring to hear.
Where exactly and when exactly is this festival going on?
Tomorrow is our opening day.
Wow, really? Tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
Whoa.
Yes, and it's in Atherton, and we're on campus at the Menlo School, and then we also perform at the Menlo Atherton Performing Arts Center. So there are concerts going on almost every day or every other day. And then there are lots of free events on campus. There are master classes every day, or a cafe conversation, which is an informal talk with the artists. And then there are encounter. Those are multimedia lectures led by the prince descendant of the Lobkowitz family. And then there are all these free concerts presented by our phenomenal young performers daily. So
you must have a lot of people working on this.
We do, and I always say it's kind of like taking all the best ingredients from everywhere and putting it together and making the best dish. So it's going to be just a great time of total immersion of studying Dvořák together.
All kinds of musicians, and then all kinds of people who aren't musicians will be doing other kinds of work. Where do you find the people who will be working on this project, all these festivals?
Well, we have a great internship at Music at Menlo as well. And so we have tons of interns that are on campus under operations development, working with artists as well, and production. So it really is quite a fascinating place to be, and the energy is so great. So hope you can join us.
And if you can't join, I understand that public radio carries
absolutely.
It. Tell us about that.
Well, Fred Child from Performance Today, and also the American media, they will be on campus at some point, and they record all of our concerts. We have a Grammy-winning recording engineer on site, and he records all the concerts, and that's where the recordings that you just played were released. And so So a lot of our recordings will get to be played on the radio. And we also have a daily video project that you can see on our website, which you will get a sense of what's happening every day at the festival. And some of the master classes will be on website as well.
Mm. This sounds wonderful. I've fallen in love with Dvorak's music years ago, and I can't get enough. It's about a part of history that I had sort of blocked out and didn't pay much attention to, but now I'm fascinated. Now I want to know more.
Yeah.
This is the you say one of the members of the royal family. This was the royal family of Bohemia when it was still Bohemia, right?
That's right. And they are the patrons for Beethoven and Mozart and Haydn as well. So if you go to the castle, you actually see the manuscript of the Eroica Symphony of Haydn String Quartet. Is really quite phenomenal.
Mm. And then when this is all over, then what are you going to be working on?
Well, I go back to teaching a week, and then I go to another festival. So it's all very exciting. But this is really where I look forward to the most coming every summer. And because every time you spend 3 weeks there, and you feel like you've had 3 years of of mm-hmm. knowledge. So.
If somebody wanted to be involved with the Chamber Music Institute as a student or as somebody, what advice do you have for them?
Absolutely. So we have two programs for the Chamber Music Institute. The international program is for artists age 18 to 28, and they're mostly conservatory aged, and a lot of them have professional careers already. And the younger group, ages 9 to 18. Mm. So you see these little 10-year-olds playing, you know, piano duos. It's just the cutest thing. And so I would just say apply and come and play for us. We'd love to hear you. And our applications are out November and auditions are in January. And we'd love to have you. Love to see more of these talents. And also join us at the concerts this summer. And we have a young performers concert every Saturday afternoon. And please come join us. And if you're interested, please come and play for us.
Oh, that would be wonderful. So you don't teach beginners, though. If I came in and said, well, I know where my put fingers on the keyboard, but that's about it.
We still love to hear you.
Really? No kidding. Excellent.
Yes.
I know how to hold a bow. That's about, yeah.
Yeah.
Gloria, thank you so much.
Thank
Very
you.
Excited about this. So the event starts, the big festival begins tomorrow.
Yes, goes all the way until August 9th.
And it's taking place in Atherton.
Yes, both at the Menlo Atherton Performing Arts Center and also at the Menlo School.
Excellent. What's a website that we can go to look at greater amounts of information?
Absolutely. It's www.musicatmenlo.org.
Musicatmenlo.org.
Absolutely.
That sounds nice and simple and easy for me to remember.
Great.
Gloria, wonderful to meet you.
Thank you. Love to join us.
Good luck on the festival. And
thank
it just
you.
Sounds like you're going to make a great, joyful sound.
Thank you for having me.
Out of that. Some Enchanted Evening. We'll sing a little bit of that. Let's all sing that right now. Explain it.
Who can tell you why? Fools give you reasons, wise men never try. Some enchanted evening, when you find your true love, when you feel her call you, to her side and make her your own. But all through your life you may dream all alone. Once you have found her, never let her go. Once you have found her,
I wanted to let that one sink in. I have a story about that. My mother had the entire South Pacific on 45 RPM records with the original CBS microphone and the note on it with a green label, and it was the entire South Pacific. Some of the records didn't survive, but that one did.
Wow.
That one did, and that one just, it makes me think of my mother.
Aww.
Oh, thank you for that. Some Enchanted Evening from the great Rodgers and Hammerstein musical called South Pacific. And welcome to Melissa Carey, who's producing this show. Tell us about the show that you're producing of South Pacific.
Well, thanks, Kevin. I'm so glad to be here. We are going up next week, a week from today, down at Foothill Music Theater. That's on the peninsula in Los Altos Hills. And it's off 280. It's in our big theater there, so it's the 550-seat house, full orchestra, cast of about 40. So it's in the grand tradition of musical theater started by Rodgers and Hammerstein, really. So it looks great, it sounds great, and it's been a really spectacular project to work on. A, we don't often get to do these old gorgeous pieces anymore. This revival at Lincoln Center just re-energized the piece, and it's just got so many important themes, and the music is gorgeous, and you know, the story is pretty tremendous too. So,
when, did you do anything different to it, or are we going to see like the same exact thing that was done on stage, or the same exact thing that was done in the movie?
Definitely not the movie, but the Lincoln Center revival did a great thing. Bartlett Sher, as the director, really streamlined it to make it move very quickly, because the original director, Joshua Logan, was really a cinematic guy. He was a movie director. So they tightened everything up. So we're doing that version of it. They also added back a few lines of dialogue for the character Nellie Forbush, the nurse, to sort of underscore her racial prejudice, which had been cut in the originals. They softened that a little bit. So they put them back in, and we've put them back in. And they reinstated a song that had been cut between Lieutenant Cable and Nellie Forbush, where they really talk about being sort of alone and lonely on this outpost in the South Seas.
For people who have never seen South Pacific, could you give me a thumbnail sketch of the story without giving it completely away?
Oh, gosh, that's hard, but yes. So James Michener wrote this collection of short stories called The Tales of the South Pacific, which won a Pulitzer. The Logan and Rodgers and Hammerstein got together to make a music of it. They took three stories, which concentrated on the heroine, Nellie Forbush, the planter, the French planter, Émile Debec, Lieutenant Joseph Cable, and a character on the island called Bloody Mary. So we have all these people who had never met before, and we have two parallel love stories between Nellie and the planter and Cable and Bloody Mary's daughter, Liot, set on the island in World War II, surrounded by Seabees. So we've got these two really intimate love stories, but in sort of an epic expanse of the wartime, of this Pacific island, this strange and magical culture. So it's quite the journey.
I got a chance to get a quick revival of the movie and this and the songs this morning, so it's very fresh in my mind. But one of the things I didn't realize about it was the story of racism and of what's the sub story about that? Would you tell that?
Sure, it was softened a little bit in the original, and there's two. So Nellie, who comes from Arkansas, and she is every bit the heroine of the musical theater that we'd expect her to be. Turns out she falls in love with the French guy, and who's a little bit older. And in his past, he'd had a relationship with a Polynesian woman and had two small children. She's perfectly happy to be in love with him until she meets the children who are of mixed race.
Mm-hmm.
End of Act One conflict, right there it is, boom. So she breaks it off because of that. The secondary love story is between Cable, who went to Princeton, educated, officer, falls in love with a beautiful young Liat, and is pressed to marry her and realizes he can't. But in the ensuing story right around there, Cable is the one who realizes that racism is taught.
Mm-hmm.
And the geniuses of Rodgers and Hammerstein wrote this song called "You've Got to Be Carefully Taught." They were pressed to cut it on the road because it was a little edgy. They didn't. They all said, no, this is what, we're leaving this in, and they did. And Cable comes to his senses and realizes that how he views people who are different than he is was taught to him. Nellie takes a little bit longer, but of course she comes to her senses as well.
Mm.
Yeah, so it was pretty bold.
That is pretty bold. When did Michener write the book, and when did the musical come out originally?
Michener wrote the book in he was actually a war historian, so he was in the service and in the South Pacific, which is how he came up with all these cool stories. So he wrote it in and around that time, and they began working on the musical in 1947, and it came to Broadway in 1949. So here we have America in this period of hopefulness and you know, economic growth, and everything was great, and yet pulling together some of the more serious, darker things that had happened in the war, and putting that into a musical. I mean, wow.
This was an important time in history for something like this
right.
to appear. Yeah.
Right.
Nothing like this had happened before, or something like this might not have.
Well, you know, it happened a little bit in Showboat in the 20s, which was also Hammerstein. It was Hammerstein and Kern. But, mm-hmm. you know, there was a little bit of racism in that as well. But it was really with this that it became a primary theme of the show, and that it is embodied by the blonde, cockeyed optimist, sweet Nellie is pretty fascinating storytelling because we love her. Mm-hmm. We love her within two minutes of meeting her. We love her. And then we come to see that she's just not as simple as it might look at first. So.
What a great story for it to unfold. Well, when the curtain show comes up, what are we going to see?
The story starts at first at Emile's house. Not a bad house, I must say.
Emile South being the French guy.
Emile Debec, the French planter, doing pretty well. So we start the show with his two children playing on his terrace. That's pretty good karma for those kids, I'd say.
Mm.
The orchestra playing the beautiful music. And then we meet Nellie and Emile, and we have the scene where we see that they are clearly in love and clearly destined for each other, and we hear that song, and it looks like everything's going to go really well. This cuts away, and then we go to the beach, and we meet the sailors, and they sing Bloody Mary, and there's nothing like a dame, and we meet Bloody Mary and Cable, and we hear the song Bally High. It's really just one hit after the other. In Act One.
And the interesting thing is that if you've never seen South Pacific, chances are you will have heard at least one song and two and three and go, oh my God, that comes from...
Exactly. I mean, before the 1960s, popular music in America was often from the musicals.
That's right. That's
so
right.
They were hits and they ran on the charts for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks.
How did you decide to do this show?
That's it's a big show. So I think it was seeing the revival. I saw it twice, and it impressed me so much with how much it is a play with music And of course, then the music is great. But boy, that story and the sense of all of those young sailors and seabees who are on the beach playing, and then they ship out at the end, and the racism and the loss and the loneliness and, you know, the wisdom that's finally achieved by the characters. I was just struck with what a tremendous piece of music theater it is.
So who will we be seeing playing who, and where did you find all these great people? I'm assuming that they're great.
I think so, of course. I might be a tiny bit biased, but...
You're entitled to be biased.
Thank you. So
you worked hard on this.
So we cast a bit of a wide net because this is sort of an old-fashioned musical, so we needed some, quote-unquote, legit singers. So we've got people coming from as far away as Mill Valley and Oakland and Alameda and San Francisco. And then I'm very happy, as I always am, Dennett, FMT, to say that for the ensemble, which is these young, fresh-faced sailors and nurses, we've got a lot of young people who are exactly the age they would have been during that time. So some of them are students of mine from courses. Mm. Some of them, this is their first show. They, of course, couldn't be more adorable. What we did with all of them, because it's easy to just say they're the ensemble, but I really wanted each of them to have a sense of character. So each of them had to come up with a name. Maybe they had one from their script, and then they had to create a little backstory of who their sailor or their CB was, and they had to go to the interwebs and find an image of a sailor or a CB or a place or a picture or their favorite dog. And so we've created a giant storyboard of all of the people, all of the characters of the island, rather than just the principals, which we will have out front of the theater because it turned out to be pretty spectacular. Some of them put their good luck charms on it and the ribbon they won when they were in the horse jumping contest, or you know, their first baby sock that the wife sent them in the care package from home. And so we've expanded it out to make it feel like the people on the island would feel, which is there's this isolated community of all of these people who'd never met before, and now they're together, and they have to come and they have to have a sense of community. And we've tried to sort of do that with the acting ensemble as well.
Fantastic. This is all taking place, FMT, you said. It's Foothill Music Theater. Tell us more about Foothill Music Theater.
Well, it's a pretty lucky that we even still have it. It's been around for quite a long time, affiliated with Foothill College. And
great school.
Great school. And decades ago, actually, they started doing, by Jay Manley, started doing musicals, a big one in the summer and a smaller one in the winter. And we've been able to continue that kind of against all odds with the budget situation in, that we all know about. But we're still going strong, and it's a wonderful place for young artists to get training, for our students to get training, our technical students get training. We're just thrilled that we can continue to do it.
That's great. What do you teach around year-round when you're not producing a show like this?
I teach, as you might expect, things related to musical theater and acting. I also teach at the San Francisco Conservatory of Music. Mm. So I'm the resident acting teacher there, and I do some stage directing for them. So my life is sort of focused on this concept of sung theater, whether it's music theater, musical theater, a little bit of opera, this place where text and music come together to bring story to the audience.
What was your first show?
My first show that I was in was Sound of Music. That's
was
right.
Was it really?
I was Little Nun. That's right. I know.
I love it.
Yes.
I love it. Now that I've gotten everybody excited about it, let me give everybody the details here. When and where? This will be July 24th, which is what, a week from today?
A week from today.
July 24th through August 10th. And the place is the Smithwick Theater on the campus of Foothill College. The address of the Foothill College is very easy to remember, 12345 El Monte Road in Los Altos Hills. Showtimes are Thursdays at 7:30 p.m., Fridays and Saturdays at 8 p.m., Sunday matinees at 2. Those are great. I love Sunday matinees. Tickets and information, you can go online to foothillmusicals.com. You can telephone 650-949-7360. And anything else I should tell people, anything you can tell people?
We really hope you'll come and join us for a sweeping, romantic, wonderful, classic piece of musical theater.
Oh, I'm looking forward to this. And sometimes there's just nothing like a dame, you know? Thank you so much, Melissa Carey.
Thanks for having me.
We got moonlight on the sea. We got mangoes and bananas you can pick right off a tree.
We got volleyball and ping pong and a lot of dandy games.
What ain't we got?
We ain't got dames.
We get packages from home.
We get movies, we get shows.
We get speeches from our skipper.
And advice from Tokyo Rose.
We get letters doused with perfume.
We get dizzy from the smell.
What don't we get?
You know damn well.
We have nothing to put on a clean white suit for.
What we need is what there ain't no substitute for.
There is nothing like a dame, nothing in the world. There is nothing you can name that is anything like a dame.
We feel restless, we feel blue,
we feel lonely and in brief.
We feel every kind of feeling but the feeling of relief.
We feel hungry as the wolf felt when he met Red Riding Hood.
What don't we feel?
We don't feel good.
Lots of things in life are beautiful, but brother, there is one particular thing that is nothing whatsoever in any way, shape, or form like any other.
There is nothing like a day. Nothing in the world. There is nothing you can name that is anything like a day. Nothing else is built the same. Nothing in the world
has a soft and wavy frame like the silhouette of a day.
There is absolute
suppose a dame ain't bright, or completely free from flaws,
or as faithful as a bird dog,
or as kind as Santa Claus.
It's a waste of time to worry over things that they have not.
Be thankful for
the things they got.
There is nothing you can name that is anything like a dame. Looks like a dame, and nothing looks like a dame. There are no drinks like a dame, and nothing thinks like a dame. Nothing acts like a dame, or attracts like a dame. There ain't a thing that's wrong with any man here that can't be cured by putting him near a girl.
Ain't Nothing Like a Dame from South Pacific being produced at Foothill College starting next week. Maybe in a not very appropriate way of introducing Diane Keogh back to the KLW microphone. Hi. Diane, what are you seeing? What's exciting?
Well, first of all, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to go see South Pacific.
Got to see it. Got to see South Pacific.
And it's going to be great. I disliked the movie intensely, and I loved the theater.
Really? Why didn't you like the movie?
I thought he was too old for her.
Oh, yeah.
I really did, and so I couldn't connect.
Interesting.
And I also didn't like the scenery. There was too many flats, and you could see there were flats.
Uh-huh. You could tell.
And that just took me away from enjoying it at all. You know, so anyway, I'm going to go see the stage play because I love it.
Oh, yeah, and it's nothing like seeing live theater.
That's what I'm for. I just absolutely adore it. And I will tell you about one that I just saw recently at Theater Works, and that was at the Lucy Stern Theater in Palo Alto. It's called The Great Pretender. It has nothing to do with the Platters song that came out.
Okay, then. I won't start singing this song then.
Okay, good. It's a really rich and complex and moving and warmly funny story about Mr. Felt. Now, Mr. Felt was the gentle host of an iconic children's TV show. Now, if you're old enough to think Cuckoo, Fran, and Ollie, mm-hmm. or if you're not old enough, you can think Mr. Rogers, mm-hmm. because he had the temperament of Mr. Rogers, a sweet, gentle man who taught children how to do little crafts and taught them manners and with his two puppets. His two puppets were Carol the Pony, who was rather obnoxious sometimes, and there was this pony, a little brown pony that was there on a puppeteer's hands, and the other one was played by his wife. And so there were three of them on the set at all times, and her name, its name was Frances, because he had never determined whether it should be a male or a female, so it was Frances. And Frances was just a regular little puppet with a big, wide-open mouth that moved. They'd been on the air for over 20 years, the same cast, which was really kind of interesting. And suddenly his wife was killed in an automobile accident. So the show had to stop, and it did go off the air for about a year. And then they decided, through the person who was the director, they were going to try and bring it back, perhaps without Frances, who was the wife. And the story really revolves around people needing help getting over their problems. Mr. Felt still felt so strongly about his wife that when the new young girl came in, who was an absolute on-the-dot voice of Frances, he felt, without knowing it, he was putting her in his wife's place and having a slight love affair in his head with her. In the meantime, the other two people in the cast, because it's a four-person cast, were watching this happen and not enjoying it at all, and they really wanted to do the show without Frances. So the show went on. We had a long time of listening to them talk to each other without Jody, the girl there. We learned about their background, about the 20 years that they had been together, never really knowing each other, which is interesting when you think that there are only three or four people together for 20 years and they don't know each other. Mm. It was a fascinating way the play went. There was no intermission, and it was a good thing that there wasn't, because there wouldn't have been a proper place to break it and pick it up again, as there can be in musicals. Mr. Felt was just the nicest, calmest, most decent man. And Jody, who came in all just with all of her energy and her 22 years of life, having listened to him all the time she was growing up, she even had a picture of him over her bed in college. So it showed that there was a slight problem with her, too. But she came in, and then we had the person who was playing Carol the Pony, Suzanne Grodner. Before she even met Jody, she hated her. She didn't know her, and she hated her. And when Jody walked in, she took one look at her and thought, no, this is never going to work. It's just never going to work. She found out that Jody did a great job. She was furious because Jody did such a good job with Frances's voice. And it turned out that at the end, they had such a long conversation. Mr. Feltz went overboard a little bit, realized he had done this, thinking about his wife. And the next thing that we saw was the new Mr. Feltz and his Clappy House, which is where he got his costumes. The show went on without Frances, and that was the end of it, saying that, you know, both people and puppets need a helping hand from time to time. It was so well done. And one of the things that was interesting is that Carol the Pony is played by Susan Grodner. She has quite a vocabulary, which she used extensively in the play, never when they were being taped for the show, but she really had a vocabulary. And then there was Michael Storm playing Tom. He was the show's director, gay, and always trying to smooth the waters. He was really the evening out of the whole evening. He tried to make everything good. And Steve Brady is Mr. Felt. It couldn't have been better. It was a lovely show. It is running still at Lucy Stern Theater, and will be there until July 11th.
July 11th.
Okay. At Lucy Stern in Palo Alto. It's a Theater Works production, and by all means, if you enjoy an evening of calm, thinking, funny, and yet moving theater. It's the place to go. It was a delightful show.
Is there a phone number or a website I can find out more information about that show?
Let's see. That's probably at TheaterWorks.
TheaterWorks. Sounds good to me. I'll look for TheaterWorks.
Look over TheaterWorks, and it's TheaterWorks.
E-Works, yes.
Yeah.
Okay,
and
excellent.
You put that in, and I'm sure you'll find it, and it's a delightful evening. It's a delightful evening.
What else is going on that you're excited about?
Well, Jersey Boys. Now, Jersey Boys is two things for me right now. I'm going to try and get through these as fast as I can. First of all is the movie, which everybody knows Clint Eastwood did. And it's one of the reviewers for the Hollywood Reporter wrote in part, it's a bracing dose of melancholy. So there is a lot of unhappiness. There is a lot of the dark side in this group because it's a story about...
The story of the Four Seasons.
The Four Seasons.
Frankie Valli, these beautiful voices.
Before they were the Four Seasons, when they were these kids from the other side of the tracks in New Jersey who grew up blue-collar kids, getting in trouble with the police, getting involved with the gangs, and unfortunately with some of the other people that they got involved with that are pretty well-known in New Jersey, getting themselves in trouble, getting themselves out of trouble. But his voice was so incredible. The movie was so dark, though, and opened in black and white in New Jersey in the early 60s. And we met Frankie at the age of 16, and it was very interesting to meet him at the age of 16 because he had that voice at 16. He didn't have any presence. He didn't have any stage presence. He was very naive about life, and it shows so clearly in the musical. But he did get his first chance to sing, and things took off from there. But there's so many funny parts in it about when and how they found their names, because they had so many names as a group, they didn't even know who they were half the time when they went to go get an audition. They didn't know what name to give. They'd had so many names that they'd used to pull four of them together. And the funny part of it was that in the scene, you see them standing outside of a bowling alley they had just been kicked out of because the bowling alley man knew them from when they had a police problem. And they're standing in there, and a sign is up there saying, "Our Sons." Our Sons, with a big bowling ball above it. At this point, four of them standing there looking around, not having anything to do, somebody comes out and fixes the sign. It says Four Seasons instead of Our Sons. And they stand there and think. And Frankie looks around and he says, "It's a sign."
I like it.
And they said, "What do you mean it's a sign?" "Of course it's a sign." He said, "No, it's a sign for us. That should be our name, the Four Seasons." And that's how they got their name.
I wondered about that. I wondered
Which
about
I think
that.
Is quite incredible. And how Francie, Frankie, who has a very long and Italian name, and had to change it. He had to change it because it was never going to last. He is out with his soon-to-be wife, who tells him, and he says, "I'm going to take my name, and it's going to be Frankie, Franky." She said, "No, it's not. It's going to be Frankie, Franki. You're Italian, like DeVito, like pizza. You're Italian." And so it became Frankie.
Let's tell people about Jersey Boys and where it is.
Jersey Boys, the theater part of it is absolutely marvelous. It is in San Jose at the Performing Arts Center there. It is a Nederlander production. It has a fabulous cast. It goes on. The music is great. The person who plays Frankie is Hayden Mullanes. He's a marvelous voice. And Bob Gaudio, the whole group of them are there. It cannot be beat. It is wonderful. It's only going to be there through Sunday. So I suggest that if you want to see, because the house was full the other night.
Really? That good a
that,
show?
That huge, huge place was full. And at the end, because they played their last song at the end, was called "Oh, What a Night." Everybody in the audience stood up, was clapping, was singing, was dancing. And it was a great evening. So it was a night.
JerseyBoysInfo.com is a website, or SanJoseTheater.org is a website you can go to. And The Great Pretender is opened on the 9th of July. It'll run through the 3rd of August again at the Lucy Stern Theater on Middlefield Road in Palo Alto. Diane, thank you so much.
It was fun. It was fun. But go see Jersey Boys, too. It's such a great, fun evening. Oh, what a night.
Gotta see it. Oh, what a night. KALW San Francisco, it's 2 o'clock.